Okay.
I believe in the freedom of an individual to do what he or she believes in, so long as their action doesn't impede the rights of other people. That means other people freedom to do other things. Because freedom has to be seen in the context where it is interdependent.
Yeah.
It is interrelated, right? If because I live here, I think that, okay, fine, I want to take a bulldozer and bulldoze my place and dump it down, that, you know, part of my yard and dump it down here, and it's going to affect my neighbor again. It is my right to bulldoze my yard, but it's still my right to dump it in my neighbor's property. So, you know, if an individual decides that, look, I'm going to smoke and I'm going to stop there and I'm going to smoke, I mean, that's a person's problem. Because all of us have our sins, our faults, no matter what way we want to look at it.
That
everybody is my like. But so long as I keep my problem, you know, my bad ways to myself, and I don't impede other people with it, that's pretty much okay with me. It's pretty much okay.
Like marijuana, you don't like put the cream on your man, but I feel it like a cigarette.
No. If I put something in rum, it's like if I have a cord or something like that, then
like an airflow.
I use something like honey and garlic, with a little lime juice and lemon or whatever. That's get right. If you put a little rum in it, you know. But I know people who, you know, who would put like, you know, the marijuana in the rum and
put that
fermenter with it and they use it for 19 pains and stuff like that. It's not that they're drinking, because that this green thing in this rum is not something that you can supposed to drink anyway. That is too potent. You know, so I know people who do that, and people use marijuana for various things, you know. And marijuana, just like any other drug or something like that, sometimes people say more about it, what it can do, more than what it can actually do. It's just the same like some other drug. Somebody went, you go to the pharmacy, that's how you prescribe something, you go to the pharmacy, you try it, and you get a relief. But maybe because you went to the doctor and your mind is more contented that doctor prescribed this drug for you, then you go home and say, this drug worked miracle. The drug didn't necessarily work in America, but the fact that you tell yourself that, you know, you're going to be healed, then mind over matter sometimes. And it's basically all you got to see these things.
So, let's have you come to this meeting in Clint Antonio. And I'd like you to consider the possibility that I, as a professor of law at Harvard Law School, am working to some extent with a class that I teach, an evidence class. I have workshop students, and that we work with you on a petition.
Let me bring you back now to another issue that I was dealing with the Blue and Jungle Mountain National Park. This park was established, I think, sometime in the late 80s, early 90s or something like that. I don't remember. Probably. Chances are I wasn't here when it was established. And what the park, what they are saying is simply this. Personally, I have no problem with conservation. I have no problem with protecting the protection of endemic species and stuff like that, right? I have no problem with that as far as I am concerned. I don't want anybody to come on my place to shoot birds and things like that. As a kid, I used to do it. But when you grow up, there are some things that you realize that there are some things that are just too precious for you to be
destroying,
you know, wantonly, you know. Now, the treaty with our forebears and the British colonial government at that point in time is that the Maroons could hunt anywhere they want in the forest within a 3-mile limit of any settlement. And any settlement would have meaning plantations and, you know, something like that. Now, when you go in, let's say the Blue Mountain and the Jungle Mountain from here, and you're not talking about 3 miles as the crow flies, but 3 miles on land.
Yeah.
You know, when you have to walk winding and stuff like that. You have a vast amount of fear to hunt, to gather wood, to do everything, without you getting to this 3 mile radius of any. So when the park was established, the fact that this treaty was there for over 250 years before this one came into being, and nobody, as far as I know, has said, well, look, an agreement has to be between two people, because an agreement can be between one person, right? It must be between two, and one side of the one of the signatures to this agreement decide that I am going to unilaterally change the agreement without consulting the other one, then you're bound to have problems down the road.
Yeah.
You're bound to have problems. Because we're out there saying, okay, you mustn't hunt the conic because it is endangered, or the black-billed parrot or whatsoever. That to me, it makes sense in the fact that it is endangered. But at the same time, how do you treat a situation when somebody who has this agreement and you never tell him that you change the rules and he never agreed to your changing the rules, when you go out and hunt and he catches a coney and he shoots a black paper, what can you do to him?
You have to let him know the law change.
No, are you going to let him know the law change? Did he agree with you to change the law?
No, that's the next thing.
You alone take a decision. And he was a part of the original agreement. No, that's to me.
Is that what's happened?
That
with,
is what,
with the park?
That is what happened. We don't have a running with them. We never had a running with them.
And, but you've lost your right to hunt up there?
As far as I am concerned, nobody loses any right to hunt anywhere.
Well, but you still have the right.
I mean, theoretically, we have the right. It's something that, if it comes to where it has to be tested in a court of law, then that is where the problem will be.
Uh-huh.
Because the fact is, I did not know, and the farmer colonel never told me that they have rescinded. I said that they will have an agreement to be setting up. Because when the government was going to set up, I have obviously set up the park down in a compound town area in the Catholic country. I was going to they hire a consultant from the United States. The gentleman I know very well, he was living here with us doing his thesis and, you know, music and ethnical music and the modern culture and everything like that, Dr. Ken Bilby. And he came to me, we sat outside there and the good thing, when he came today, the captain was here with me and my father was here with me and I think the major was here. I don't remember what we were doing, but somehow or the other we were already here and we discussed and he asked me about the problem and things that we have here in regulation to this park and how they should proceed, you know, in setting up that one down there, knowing that it's going to encompass the Maroon area again as well. Well, I explained to him as best as I could what I knew about the park and the setting and how it is and the restriction that they have. But that, as I know it now, is causing a problem in the Catholic country. Because the Maroons in a compound town want to have more say in the whole thing. And they are defending their land, which I don't blame them. Because when the original treaty was to be signed between themselves, or, you know, and the British. The British started about the trickery in the first place. 15,000 acres of land ended up being 1,500 acres of land. You see, when you negotiate something in the bush, and you are not able to read and write,
yeah,
or at least not read to read and write English, then somebody come and they say, okay, they write a document and tell you that this is what is on the document. You can say, well, you're going to get 100 gallons of water, but not for the fact it is 10 beer. But you sign, you make your mark here. Because it tells you it's 100, but it's actually 10 written on the paper.
Yeah.
And you make your mark there, The only way you can always say that you have read it to your leader said 10 and you agree to it. But you are not going to negotiate for 100.
Well, one of the things that we might talk about profitably on Sunday is the way in which taking a position on something that stimulates debate actually increases visibility and power of the group. If, for example, let's imagine success. Let's just tell the story of success and see if it's plausible. If, for example, this petition on marijuana were to be seen as interesting and, a little bit of humor in it,